You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Darrell Connor. Coming up tomorrow at 6 on the morning show, it's Cookies from West of the Border. Kate Archer Kent talks to the author of the Great Minnesota Cookie Book tomorrow morning at 6 here on the Ideas Network.
Now, President Trump had a rowdy exchange last week in the Oval Office with Senator Chuck Schumer and Representative Nancy Pelosi, leaders of their respective caucuses. At issue was the president's demand for $5 billion in federal funds to build a wall at the U.S.-Mexico border and the risk of a government shutdown.
20 times Chuck, you have called for, I will shut down the government if I don't get my wall. None of us have
said. You want to know something?
You've said
it. Okay, you want to put that
you
in my.
You said it.
I'll take it.
Okay, good.
You know what I'll say? Yes. If we don't get what we want, one way or the other, whether it's through you, through a military, through anything you want to call, I will shut down the government.
Okay, absolutely.
And I am proud, and I'll
we
tell
disagree.
You what, I am proud to shut down the government for border security, Chuck, because the people of this country don't want criminals and people that have lots of problems and drugs pouring into our country. So I will take the mantle.
It seemed all but certain that the government was shut down after Democrats and Republicans in Congress dug in their heels over border security funding despite a looming deadline this Friday.
But today the White House signaled it would back off the shutdown threat and find funding for the wall through other means.
Our next guest is here to talk about the politics of government shutdowns, why they seem to be utilized more frequently, and the impact these have on the way government works.
Philip Chen is an assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. Philip, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Of course, happy to be here.
All right, the news changes from minute to minute sometimes, but at the latest, it looks like this a partial shutdown. It wouldn't be the whole shebang.
Right.
Partial shutdown maybe isn't going to happen?
Probably isn't going to happen. Of course, they haven't really agreed on what the legislation that will come out of this will be. It's signals from the White House, but no official word yet from President Trump as to what might actually be acceptable to him.
Let's give a listen to one of his spokespeople, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, going on Fox News this morning talking about funding the border wall and working with Congress.
We have other ways that we can get to that $5 billion that we will work with Congress if they will make sure that we get a bill passed that provides not just the funding for the wall, but there's a piece of legislation that's been pushed around that Democrats actually voted 26-5 out of committee that provides roughly $26 billion in border security, including $1.6 billion for the wall. That's something that we would be able to support as long as we can couple that with other funding resources that would help us get to the $5 billion.
That is a partial yes.
So other sources of the money seems to be a key thing here. She's hoping for $1.6 billion from Congress, which is not a slam dunk, but
right.
Also the other $3.4 billion coming from where? Do we have any idea?
It's a little unclear. What we've seen is that they've asked a lot of different, all of the departments really, to see if they have funds in unspent funds, discretionary funds that may be available to use for the wall. But again, that's not really how the budgeting process works. So even if they were to find those funds, they still need congressional approval to use those to build a wall.
And is it likely that, at least given the current makeup of Congress, that they could get Congress to sign off on a change in the intended funding?
I think it's highly unlikely. I mean, you would still need 60 votes in the Senate. You have a Democratic caucus on both sides, both the Senate and the House, that's emboldened by the last election. I just don't see any way it either getting through the Senate with 60-vote margin, even if it were to get through the House in the lame duck session.
And the House is going to change, as you mentioned,
House
a big
change,
40 seats, I think, at last count.
39, 40 seats.
So that doesn't make life any easier for President Trump
No.
on getting wall funding.
No, exactly. Nancy Pelosi has been forthright in saying this is just something that's not on the table for us. And so I think what you saw is prior to this, last year, earlier this year, actually, when we had another shutdown, a relatively short shutdown, there was this kind of dynamic that it could have been blamed on Senate Democrats, maybe even House Democrats. And so there was an electoral incentive for Democrats to move on a bill there. I don't think you just don't see that same kind of dynamic at this point after the midterm elections.
Talking to Philip Chen from Beloit College, looking at border wall funding and the risk of a government shutdown, partial government shutdown, probably being averted TBD still. Philip, let's talk about the blame game that gets played over these shutdowns. Mm-hmm. It usually looks like, in general, if somebody gets the blame for a shutdown, voters don't really like that. They want, in general, government to do the stuff that it does.
Mm-hmm. That's true. The political science evidence on this suggests that government shutdowns actually don't have a particularly long-term electoral impact. The public opinion impact, the memory sort of the American public, is relatively short on these, largely because they tend not last for that long, and they also tend to not have a massive influence. Yes, there is evidence that they affect the GDP and earnings. Obviously, there are hundreds of thousands of federal workers that will not be paid, and so there are real-life effects for a shutdown. But in general, the sort of long-term electoral effects fade quite quickly.
And a shutdown in December of 2018 might not be top of mind, say, November of 2020.
Exactly. In fact, I think it probably had faded from the minds of basically everyone in by the midterm.
That said, people don't seem to want to take blame. And Republicans in Congress didn't seem terribly happy when the president said, yes, I want this shut down. I will take the mantle.
Absolutely not. Of course not. They want to be able to play that blame game, like you said. There's a political advantage to being able to say this is the result of polarization, of obstinance on the other side. And when you have the leader of your party stand up and say, I will gladly take the blame for this, that sort of takes the legs out from under you as far as how you can play that card.
Now, this is something that I don't think used to happen on our shows on the Ideas Network, where we could kind of count on almost semi-regular conversations about the next looming shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't used to do it this way, right?
Right. We didn't. This has been a... We've seen shutdowns I wouldn't say frequently, but they have been a part of American politics for, you know, since Carter, Reagan, that kind of era. But for the most part, we haven't seen the same kind of sort of high stakes shutdowns that we've seen more recently, largely because as the House and the Senate have polarized, the parties have become much further apart, and we have good empirical evidence that that's the case. It's much harder for both parties to find common ground, and the nature of the budgeting process is such that it's just very difficult to get a budget passed, which is why we don't actually see that many budgets passed. You hear a lot more about continuing resolutions, which are really just a way to keep the government open.
Right, and since we have these short-term fixes, we have these short-term ends of those fixes where there's a new deadline and a new fight with the possible risk of a shutdown, right?
Correct. And so, exactly, as you have short-term fixes, we aren't budgeting. Normally, if you were to do budgeting the way sort of Congress intends to do it, you would have a budget passed every year, and that would be sort of a regular, timely thing. Instead, we have these continuing resolutions. Sometimes you'll see them pushed off for maybe a year, sometimes for a few months, sometimes a few weeks, all about sort of the political power play to try to put the other side in a bind. But that leads to these sort of continual shutdowns. I mean, if we're talking a continuing resolution now that the last I saw maybe until February, it means we can say we'll probably be talking about a potential government shutdown around the middle of February.
Now, this is a huge question, and I don't know that anybody has the answer to this, but do you see there being a path from where we are now to what I think most people would agree would be a more reasonable path of, hey, we'll do a 2-year budget, kind of like mm-hmm. we are supposed to do?
I mean, I think that in the short term, no. Partially because, strangely enough, while most states work on a 2-year budget, the U.S. Congress, the federal government works on a 1-year budget. So that's actually been a proposal that some sort of institutional reformers within political science have proposed, is to move to this 2-year budget cycle so that you can have a longer time before having these conversations. So that's one possibility, but it's a long-term possibility. I mean, with the way that Congress is made up right now, the way the parties are positioned, I think it's unlikely that we'll see major movement on sort of institutional reform in that way.
One argument I've seen is that part of the problem is that Congress got rid of so-called earmarks or pork barrel spending which got a bad rap.
Yes.
And it might be, hey, so-and-so congressperson, sacrifice, compromise your principles a little bit, and we'll build the hockey rink museum in your district, and you'll have something to show mm-hmm. that, you know, your voters. Without that to sweeten deals, there's less reason for people to compromise.
Yeah, that's been an argument that has been made actually quite a bit in political science, simply because earmarks, I don't think it's about necessarily compromising principles, but there are obviously incentives to vote for or against certain packages, and to do the kind of deal making that you need to do, earmarks were a really convenient way to do that. And truthfully, they made up such a small portion of the federal budget that cutting earmarks or eliminating earmarks was really more about sort of a public face, a public show, than it was about actually saving money. That being said, it was a really popular thing. I mean, this is the sort of the issue, right? That very popular things in the American among the American public often don't cost a lot of money, or very unpopular things in the case of earmarks.
We're talking to Philip Chen right now, assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. He's with us to talk about the government shutdown that probably won't happen by the end of the week and the politics surrounding the U.S. border wall.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this latest fight over the wall that President Trump wants to build along the U.S.-Mexico border? How do you think Congress should handle these issues? What questions do you have about government shutdowns? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrer.
And I'm Darrell Conner. We continue our conversation about the looming government shutdown that was seemingly averted today. Our guest is Philip Chen. He's an assistant professor of political science at Beloit College.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Is border wall funding worth shutting down part of the government over? Are you tired of being on the brink of government shutdowns and funding crises in Congress monthly, almost quarterly at the very least? How would you like to see lawmakers handle these situations? What questions do you have for our guest about shutdowns as a political tool? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. And Philip, President Trump was very specific about what he wanted on the campaign trail, and since he wants to build a wall. Mexico, the original plan was going to pay for it. Now he's going to Congress for funding for it. But that very specific thing, not general border security improvements, but a physical wall in particular, is that that symbolic and practical thing really driving the conversation here?
I think it is for a lot of his supporters and for him as well. I think he views this as, I'm sort of putting words in his mouth, but I think he views it as a major campaign project promise to actually build a wall. And that, I think, is problematic, because when you try to put it out as, you know, this is the thing that I will do, the other side knows exactly what you want. And there's plenty of ways for them to then frame that in a different manner. So I think that there is a lot of there's a very big symbolic importance to the physical wall in this case.
Is there language that could split the difference, where Democrats can say, yeah, we'll give some money to border security, and in some places that might look like a wall, and in some places it's a fence, and like, is there a halfway point where they can meet on a wall?
So I think that the Democrats, what we've seen when you look at what the Democrats in Congress have proposed, is they are trying to do that. They're trying to find a way to say, we are for border security, but not for a wall. They're framing this as, a wall is ineffective. We need better, newer technologies to protect the border. And I think the problem is that when you have a president who believes a campaign promise is to build a physical wall, that's sort of a non-starter. And you've seen that from Democratic leaders, is saying this is a non-starter. A wall itself is just not going to happen.
Let's bring on a caller now. Joe is with us in New Richmond. Joe, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I guess I'll take my comments off the air, but I just want to say that I think I'm fine with shutting the government down for the border wall. We send billions of dollars all over the world, and we should take care of our country and our border first.
All right, Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Joe, at least one person says, yes, the wall is worth it, and we should play hardball to get the funding for it.
I think this is, I don't think Joe represents sort of a minority opinion on this one. I think that what we see is that this is a pretty common thing, is that when you have strong partisan sides on an issue, it makes sense that if you know that there are signals coming from party elites, and so I don't think that this is a minority opinion at all. I think there's lots of people who are going to share that opinion.
Thanks a lot for that call. But not that long ago, this wasn't the absolute opinion of the leadership of the Republican Party.
Right.
Some supporters of the Republican Party, some elected officials of the Republican Party were on board with this. Many were not.
Mm-hmm.
Is this just because of Donald Trump that the party is on board with this?
I don't think you can say it's just because of Donald Trump. I think what we've seen is a shift in the nature of the political parties, that as we've seen greater polarization, greater sort of ideological space between the two parties, issues quickly map onto that. And so whereas you may have had common ground, middle ground on something like immigration, even as recently as, you know, the second Bush presidency, we're seeing this. In many ways, I don't think what we've seen is Donald Trump as sort of a cause of this, but as sort of the effect of greater polarization among the parties.
Thanks for that call. We'll go now to Ted in Janesville. Ted, hi.
Hi.
What'd you want to bring up, Ted?
I have a couple of points, if I may. Number one, I'm concerned about the humanity of the whole situation with people, but my major concern is the ecosystem. You build a wall like that, and now as people, us as human beings, are controlling the environment of animals that use this system to survive back and forth, what is that going to do in long term?
Ted, thanks for the call. Ted mentioned humanitarian concerns, environmental concerns, the practicalities of the wall. There are a lot of things that people are worried about and how it would actually be implemented.
Yeah, I think this is a fair point as well. That in fact, there was just a recent article that came out from a county official, Republican county official in Texas, who actually runs, I think it's a butterfly sanctuary there, right on the border. And this is another environmental concern. There's lots of concerns that I think people have raised about their border wall. Nevertheless, in addition to sort of concerns about efficacy of whether this is the most effective way to secure the border.
Philip Chen is with us, assistant professor of political science at Beloit College, talking about the prospects for a partial government shutdown. It looks a little less likely as of the news today. Not out of the woods yet, though. Back to your calls. Mike is with us in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hi, I'm pro shutdown. I think we should let it get shut down, and maybe they'll learn their lesson. And then I think when they restart the government, we should fire all the Republicans, fire all the Democrats, and start over with a non-corrupt government. Our current budget is $23 billion for border security. There's only 7 billion people on the entire planet. That's about $3 for every man, woman, and child on the entire planet is what we're about to spend currently on just this fiscal budget.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. In addition to a specific point, I think Mike shares a very common sentiment, frustration, mm-hmm. with both parties, with the political leaders, wherever they're coming from.
Yeah, I think this has been a running theme for the last, maybe two decades. We've just seen continually lower and lower evaluations of especially Congress. Congress, you know, regularly sits in the sort of high single digits, 10-15% range of approval, simply because people don't like the way that Congress functions. And so that's a problem, because there is, that our institutions rely on legitimacy and trust from the people. And without that kind of legitimacy or trust, we run into real problems with the sort of belief in the things that are passed by those bodies.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Part of the problem with that, though, is a person might be frustrated that Congress doesn't get things done. They may be frustrated with what it does get done. They may be frustrated with the other side for opposing their views. They might be frustrated with their own side if they perceive them as compromising. Mm-hmm. That distrust of Congress comes from so many angles. How do you fix that?
I mean, to some extent, I don't think you can fix it. There's some pretty good academic research that shows part of the reason is that people actually just don't like to see the way that government operates, that the physical act of democracy, of legislating, of passing laws, is not a particularly popular thing because people don't like to see compromise. They don't like to, they have their own beliefs. They don't like to see their own side compromising. They don't like to see the other side winning. There's a lot of moving parts to it, and people tend to like more specific answers or clearer answers. And it's that's part of the research that has been out there that shows why we might have such low impressions of Congress.
30 seconds or so for a weird thought. Is it that our media brings us so close into the chambers and we see Congress at action where we wouldn't have 100, 200 years ago that we have this more intense and visceral like of Congress?
Yeah, I mean, actually, you've brought up a really great point. There actually is a lot of evidence for that. And the media, and especially, interestingly enough, the Sunshine Laws that were passed to open meeting laws, things like that, they did some great things for learning about what was going on and reducing corruption. But they also opened up the process to the American people and resulted in sort of less trust or less interest, less faith in the way that the process works.
We'll leave it there for now, Philip. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Of course, happy to be here.
Philip Chen is an assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. He joins today to talk about government shutdowns, their role in the political process, and more.